You're listening to Central Time. I'm Veronica Ricker.
And I'm Rob Ferret. According to a recent New York Times article, some major presidential candidates on both sides of the aisle are steering clear of the phrase middle class in their campaign language. Phrases like everyday Americans, hardworking Americans, and ordinary Americans are filling the void.
And that may not be a random word choice, but instead a conscious campaign strategy. As people are starting to see the phrase middle class as a symbol of anxiety, there's concern about income inequality and debt and personal fears that people can't afford the American dream. Sociologists and others say middle class status is something people are afraid of losing instead of a hope for the future.
Michelle Dickerson joins us now for a look at the changing meaning of the phrase middle class and the changing prospects for people in that socioeconomic group. She's the Arthur L. Moeller Chair in Bankruptcy Law and Practice at the University of Texas at Austin, and she writes about issues facing the middle class. Michelle, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Thanks for having me on.
So I can say middle class, and 50 different people might define it 50 different ways. What are some of the ways that we try to pin down this concept of the middle class?
Well, one thing that we shouldn't do is to use the term income. But when we historically have thought of middle class, we thought of certain staples. Do you own a home? Do you have a safe, stable, secure job that you can depend on having for a number of years, and that will give you probably you'll get a raise? Can you put your kids through college without either you or your kids plunging into debt? Can you retire comfortably? Those are the things that we typically have associated with the middle class.
And in the way people think of it themselves, you've written that pretty much everyone who thinks of themselves as not rich but not poor thinks of themselves as middle class. That's a pretty big group, isn't it?
Well, and really the way that we should look at it is the middle class is everybody but the very rich. Because most people, if you talk to them, would say, I'm not poor, but I'm also not rich. And so what that leaves is the middle class. But you're absolutely right. That's probably 90% of Americans.
Well, let's get to the idea of middle class status as a source of fear and anxiety. And it seems like where a lot of the anxiety is coming from is, you mentioned income on the one hand and these markers of middle class identity on the other, the home ownership, sending kids to college and the other stuff. Are we at a point where a lot of people have the mismatch? They think of themselves as middle class. Their income doesn't sustain those middle class markers anymore.
Exactly. And if you look at even the way that the middle class is defined by income, if you just looked at the sort of the government sources, the census data, the median income is $53,000. But if you look at the way that certain research institutes or even the media defines middle class, it's between $40,000 and $120,000. Again, that's a huge gap. It makes sense, though, because a lot of the things that people have associated with the middle class, a lot of the markers, are they sort of watch them slipping out of their reach. So home ownership rates are at their lowest in 20 years. Although the unemployment rates are down from the recession, many of the jobs that are being formed now are the low-wage, low-skilled jobs in the retail and the service sector. So the middle class used to be, a lot of folks that were in the middle class had what I would characterize as high-wage, low-skilled jobs. So if you think of sort of the manufacturing jobs that used to be throughout the Midwest and also in sort of the Pennsylvania steel area, a lot of those jobs and the income, it's just gone.
So is this a growing reality that people are faced with a choice if they want to keep these middle-class markers going, the home, the college, the vacations? They have to choose between letting some of them go or living with more and more debt than they might have previously.
Well, they certainly have to live with more debt, but sadly, I don't think it's becoming really a choice anymore. Even people that would like to have high-wage, low-skilled jobs, they're not going to get them in most instances because those jobs are just gone. Wages, except for the very top earners, have been stagnant for about 30 years. The wages just haven't kept pace with inflation. For people that are thinking in terms of, college for their kids, The good news is a lot of the elite schools, sort of the Ivy, Stanford, MIT, those types of schools, they're now making college relatively inexpensive for people who I think we could characterize as the middle class, middle income. So a lot of the Ivy League schools will allow children who come from families that earn, you know, sort of $50,000 to $60,000 a year or less to go to college for free. The problem is the person that's earning $100,000 says, but look, I can't afford to put my kids, send my kids to college either. What about me?
We're talking to Michelle Dickerson from the University of Texas at Austin about the changing concept and reality of the middle class in the United States, maybe growing anxiety over whether people in the middle class can stay there and keep up the lifestyle usually associated with it. You can join in with your thoughts, experiences, and questions at 800-642-1234 or post on the Central Time Facebook page. So, Michelle, that New York Times article we started by referring to says people are feeling maybe more anxiety when they hear middle class than what we used to think, you know, hope, something to aspire to. Do you think that psychologically middle class is becoming a term of fear and anxiety for us?
I think for a lot of people it's a terrifying term because they've always felt they were in the middle class, but when they hear the term, they realize, I'm slipping out of the middle class. And again, if you think, if most people put themselves in the not poor, not rich, I'm in the middle class, a lot of the people that are slipping from the middle class only see that they're now slipping into the I'm becoming poor. And that's terrifying to a lot of people. And so when you hear the term middle class, they're saying, I'd love to be in the middle class the way it was 30 or 40 years ago, but that's disappearing now, and there's a lot of anxiety that's wrapped up and associated with that term now.
And the trajectory we think of for the American dream is, you know, I did okay, my kids are going to do a little better, their kids are going to do a little better, and so on down the generations. Is there a sense now, you think, that that's not a given, that people are worried their kids are not going to have the same opportunities they do?
It's not a given, and people have reason to be concerned. Upward mobility, as we've known it in the United States, at least as we knew it for, you know, a couple of hundred years, it doesn't really exist anymore. So when you look at the children of sort of the middle class, they go to college, so they, you know, they do well in high school. They go to college, they graduate from college, and they are facing a labor market that may not give them a full-time job that gives them benefits. The jobs that they receive, and I say job plural because a lot of students who are graduating from college are now having to take more than one job to get the same income that their parents got when they had one job. So the students are graduating with a couple of jobs, and they still can't afford to be out on their own. So you have college students who are boomeranging and coming back and living, you know, in their parents and their parents' basements, maybe going back to the room that they grew up in when they were in high school. So parents are worried, and there's good reason for them to be worried.
Now, those candidates we started off talking about want to be able to say, we can help the middle class or working Americans or ordinary Americans, whatever they want to call them. You've written in a piece earlier this year, actually, it's actually hard to target policies that help the middle class people who need it. Sometimes things intended to do that help wealthier people instead.
Yeah, and sort of the best example was a quick comment that President Obama made in the State of Union Address when they were floating the idea of making sort of slight modifications to the college savings plans, which are typically referred to as the 529 plans. Overwhelmingly, the people that are saving in these tax-preferred college plans are people who we generally wouldn't define as middle class. These are people that are earning $150,000 and higher. So in his attempt to provide some sort of relief to the people that are earning, you know, $50,000, $60,000, $70,000, he infuriated people that were trying to save for college, even though these people earned $150,000, $200,000. So good intentions really backfired in that case.
Let's go to our callers now. We've got Jim on the line in Tomahawk. Jim, hi, you're on the air.
Hello. Yeah, I just wanted to comment. We just had a discussion of this before we left work, bunch of guys, and we were talking about, and let me put this out there, we're all high-skilled labor. The market today for carpenters, there's the amount of money that you make, the hourly rate, has gone down over the last 15 years. It's the lowest paying job as a carpenter I've ever had. And they're just not there. Like, the jobs aren't there. But what we were commenting on is how none of us can afford a brand-new truck. You know? I mean, we all are responsible men. We go to work. We come home. You know, we live responsible lives. And not one of us there could afford a truck. And we all make, you know, between $18 and $24 an hour. And how now, you know, 20 years ago, you could afford a new truck, or 15 years ago. And it just all seems out of reach.
Yeah. Jim, thanks a lot for the call. Michelle, a skilled tradesperson there, once upon a time, I think that would be a thing where you could afford the truck, send the kids to school. Maybe not so much anymore.
Yeah, he's a member of the disappearing middle class. It's the person that has a job. And he said, you know, I get up every day. I go to work. I work hard. He probably works at least 40 hours a week. But he's being paid less than he would have been paid 30 years ago. And, you know, the comment that I made earlier, wages just haven't been going up for anybody except for the very rich. And so I think his name is Jim. Jim and lots of other people, you know, I'm doing the right thing. I go to work, and I can't even afford to get a new truck. You know, he didn't say, I want to go out and buy this big, you know, 4,000-square-foot McMansion. He just wants to be able to buy a new truck. And things like that that were markers of the middle class, again, they're just disappearing, which is why you see a lot of the anxiety and the frustrations.
Jim, thanks for the call. We're talking to Professor Michelle Dickerson from the University of Texas at Austin, talking about the changing prospects for middle-class America and the uncertain meaning of what it means to be middle-class.
And you can join the show. What does it mean to you to be middle-class? Is it the income, or is it a lifestyle or a values thing? Do you consider yourself to be middle-class? Are you worried that you might not be able to afford the lifestyle in the future, or that your kids might be worse off economically than you are? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or you can post on the Central Time Facebook page. We continue our conversation now about the changing meaning of the term middle class in the United States and its shift from a status people aspire to one they fear losing. Michelle Dickerson stays with us. She's a professor of law at the University of Texas, Austin, and she's written about the changes and challenges facing middle class America.
And you can join in at 800-642-1234. Do you consider yourself middle class? Are you worried you're not able to afford the things we usually associate with the middle class status, home ownership, sending kids to college, that kind of thing? Call 800-642-1234 or post on the Central Time Facebook page. Michelle, before we go back to our callers, solutions. A lot of people, politicians, think tanks, professors, and others are trying to figure out how to turn things around here. Where do you think the answers might lie, if any?
Well, one place, because I've written a lot about home ownership, one place that I think we have to completely change in terms of our American public policy is how we view housing. We really have to develop housing policies that don't focus exclusively on everybody has to own their own single-family detached home. The housing market still has not recovered in most regions since the recession, and what we're seeing now are people who can't afford to buy a home, but they also can't afford the rents because the rents are increasing because so many people are renting now. So one place where we have to start in terms of sort of the core of what the American dream used to be is to redefine what we mean when we say that, you know, you have secure housing.
We'll go back to our callers now. Heather is on the line in Sun Prairie. Heather, hi.
Hi. Hey, I had to call in when I heard this. We're leaving the country, my family. We're done. I'm what I'd like to call the high-skill, low-wage. I have a master's degree, and I'm a teacher, but I really don't make very much money. I barely make it into what's considered middle class by the government on my own. And I've got a son that is graduating from high school, and my husband is Portuguese, and we're moving to Portugal because college tuition is public. It's free. We don't have to go into debt. As we are looking towards getting older, also health care is covered by the country. And I think that my kids will have a much better chance at being successful living in Europe than they will in the United States. We've given up.
Wow. Heather, thank you so much for calling and sharing that story. So reversing hundreds of years of immigration from Europe to here. I don't know if Heather is the norm, Michelle, but I mean, do you think people will start looking to move, whether within the country or beyond, to try to find these opportunities?
I think they will, and especially the interesting, one of the interesting things, because she said a lot of interesting things, but one of the things that Heather said is sort of the timing. You know, my son is graduating from high school. So a lot of people may choose to remain where they are and to kind of, you know, slog it out and do the best they can until either their kids are at a point where they're movable or their kids are at a point where, the kids are sort of on their own, and then there will be mobility. One of the things that's happened in the last 15 years, I'd say, and it's somewhat tied into housing, is that we've become somewhat less mobile as homeowners. Because people are living in their homes, the homes aren't worth what they owe on the homes in terms of the amount of mortgage, so they can't move to another city or state or region in the United States because they're trapped to the home. And given the way the labor markets are, people are going to have to be willing and able to move to wherever the jobs may be.
Talking to Michelle Dickerson from the University of Texas about middle class status in the United States, changing ideas, a decline of the middle class, and anxiety about that status. Back to our callers now with Michael on the line in Milwaukee. Michael, hi.
Hi. I made a couple of points. One thing, of course, yes, good paying jobs are disappearing. I worked my whole life. I'm 69 years old. I worked my whole life as a tool and die maker. It was a pretty decent paying job throughout my whole career, a lot of overtime. But you know what? On the other hand, the expectations of the middle class have gotten way out of control, what people think middle class people or working class people should be able to afford. You know, the expectations for the $300,000 five-bedroom house and the big acre lot or whatever in the suburbs and a bunch of fancy cars that have every option available. And a person earlier mentioned a truck. You know, you can still buy a truck for very inexpensive truck, but now everybody wants a $45,000 or $50,000 truck that has all these. They're not even trucks anymore. And I think that's part of the problem. Expectations got way out of control, and we've got a generation coming up right now that's looking for a lifestyle that unattainable. You know,
Michael, I want to jump in and give our guest a chance to chime in on this. So Michael's saying, yeah, the jobs are going, but also our expectations of what middle class life should look like have gotten out of whack. Do you agree, Michelle?
Somewhat. And there's a timing problem, though. I guess that would be my one quibble. I think the expectations jumped around the 1970s, 80s, early 90s. What we weren't paying attention to during that period was that wages had stopped increasing. No one anticipated the severity of the recent recession. And so just as people had become accustomed to a higher lifestyle in the middle class, all of the things that we needed to sustain the middle class were disappearing. The one thing I totally agree with, though, are what I refer to as the McMansions. What we now expect to be a bare necessity in our homes in terms of square footage, it has become, at least in some areas, quite unreasonable.
Well, Michelle, before we wrap up, the point we started with these presidential candidates avoiding, in some cases, using the phrase middle class, maybe it's just savvy politics, but are you worried that maybe it's a sign that they might not be confronting these problems head on?
I don't think they are confronting them head on, because if they wanted to confront the problems head on, what they would do is say the top 10% and everybody else, because that's really what we're talking about. Most people in the country haven't received wages, haven't received raises for the last, 10, 20, 30 years. The top 10% and especially the top 1 to 2%, they're doing just fine. Their retirements are stable. They don't have to worry about losing their homes. They can buy any truck that they want to. But the reality is the politicians can't alienate them because that's who their financial political backers are.
All right, Michelle, thank you so much for joining us. And by the way, stay dry down there in Texas.
Thanks a lot. I'll try.
That was Michelle Dickerson, law professor at the University of Texas, Austin. I've been talking about the changing meaning of middle class economics and identity here in the United States. And you can keep this conversation going. Just head on over to the Central Time Facebook page. You can share your thoughts and maybe your story over there.